CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Baptist with Captain Jerry Hendricks, United States Navy retired aviator, writing most recently to provide and maintain a Navy, why naval primacy is America's first best strategy. However, the captain is reflecting upon historical events in the past, the Sputnik moment, and looking now at what we know, and it's not transparent, about the announced hypersonic missile tests, especially by the People's Republic of China, although other bad actors are boasting. The PRC is said to have been orbital, and this is an orbital bomber. Question is, what is to be done? And we come now to the syndrome that Jerry identifies in the historical reflection on Sputnik moment, the not invented here syndrome. What is that, Jerry?
Well, the problem here is that, you know, the Americans, we tend to want to own what it is that we develop, the intellectual product. And so this isn't just about the United States wanting to reject the research and technology of other nations. But in fact, inside the U.S. government, for instance, the U.S. Navy not necessarily wanting to take the lessons learned from the other services. This was a problem at that time with the development of the ICBM, that the services were sort of protective of what it was that they were developing in-house and not necessarily out there sharing and cooperating with each other. Right now, I think it's important that we step back not only as a nation, but also sort of in a broader Western alliance. And that we look, so I talked earlier about the importance of not sharing things openly so that it's available to the Russians and the Chinese, but we do need cooperation amongst the leading scientific and engineering powers on this thing so that we can leverage the knowledge across a broader base. So like right now, we're working very closely with the UK and the Australians on the development of submarines, and sharing that technology with the Australians because they have the geostrategic advantage in location. I think that we ought to be also looking at sort of a sharing of capabilities when it comes to hypersonics. I know that the Australians have a leading hypersonics university, that they've been working on this with hypersonic wind tunnels for a long time. We have leading universities both in Texas and in Indiana where Purdue University has a hypersonic wind tunnel and are building another one. So this idea of cooperating on a scientific and an educational format to share this information and share the lessons learned. I will tell you the U.S. has a one major advantage over everyone. And this is important to understand, is that we developed the NASA, and NASA developed the space shuttle. And the space shuttle was essentially a hypersonic glide vehicle, came back into the Earth's atmosphere at Mach 25. And we have literally decades of experience and engineering data and telemetry from those space shuttle missions that can help guide us as we start to build these glide vehicles that go on top of missiles and then become the weapon, as it were. That data that's in NASA and within the scientific community needs to make sure that it's being shared and distributed throughout the military community, and that there's a virtuous cycle of innovation going on between civilian research and then the military development. And I hope that that is happening today.
That is the civilian parallel effort you cite, but I want to go to priorities matter. We know now that the significant leadership of the DOD, following the recommendation of the White House, is declaring climate change as existential and also dealing with COVID-19 as existential. Those are priorities. Is there a comparable priority for the hypersonic missile, to your knowledge?
I don't believe so. And this is an important lesson learned. President Eisenhower took a briefing, and this, by the way, briefing occurred in 1956, a year before the Sputnik moment. He took a briefing where missiles and ballistic missiles were briefed to him in the various different programs. And following that meeting of the National Security Council where they considered intercontinental ballistic missiles, President Eisenhower declared, and he made a written statement that was distributed to the Secretary of Defense and to the rest of the entire government, that the development of intercontinental ballistic missiles and intermediate range ballistic missiles was the top priority, a national security priority of the United States government. And basically that letter, which one person later referred to as his hunting license, allowed the Department of Defense to move out and talk with industry and talk with educational and engineering faculties and said, this is the number one priority. Please help us. And with that letter and also with the budgeting authority that came along with it, they began to accelerate. So it's important to understand we developed two intermediate range ballistic missiles and three ICBMs in the matter of about 4 years, where we had both the Jupiter and the Thor missile, as well as the Polaris missile, and then the Atlas and the Titan missiles, all were coming online by the end of the Eisenhower administration. An additional missile, the Minuteman, came online just a few years into the Kennedy administration. That level of prioritization, where essentially you say this is item number one on the list, needs to be occurring right now with the development of these hypersonic missiles. That occurred in the Trump administration. I know that Ambassador O'Brien, this national security advisor, often spoke that the development of hypersonics was one of the top three issues of the day, and he repeated that in virtually every speech. We need that sort of prioritization from administration officials today.
We have a few minutes, Jerry. Is there a missile gap? The bugaboo of 1960, is it back?
Without a doubt, it's back, and it's even a wider gap today than what it was in the 1950s. So as I said earlier, we were only a few months away from launching our first Atlas ICBM when Sputnik went up in 1957. Right now, we're not looking at the Army saying that they would have operational capability in hypersonics until 2022 or 2023. So the gap is present, and it's wider today than what we experienced during the height of the Cold War. And this should disturb each and every American citizen.
Strategic implications. Right now, we're talking about a weapon system that doesn't much exist, Jerry. Is this a new arms race? Have we stepped into what we'll call a quasi-Cold War?
Yes, I think we have. We have stepped into a new arms race. It's a very destabilizing aspect of the arms race when someone else sees that they have a clear technological advantage. That creates the perception that they have a window of opportunity, and within that window, if they do not move, they will lose that advantage as their competitor catches up with them. Combined with the Davidson window, where Admiral Davidson, you know, remarked that he thought that China would attack Taiwan sometime within the next 6 years, and Xi Jinping's clear desire to reestablish his Middle Kingdom supremacy, at least in the Western Pacific, East Asia region, we really have a mixture that's toxic right now. So they have a clear advantage in a key technological area, and they have a desire to use it. I'm very concerned right now about the instability in the international arena.
The conclusion of the Sputnik moment. Did we overcome our anxieties? Did we settle into a pace that was acceptable to the American people, or did we need to put Apollo 11 on the moon to end the anxiety? How long does it last, Jerry?
You know, it's interesting you say that. I think that we solved the immediate problem with ICBMs fairly quickly, where both parties came to a consensus that they were doing all that they could. But in many ways, I do believe because the manned space program became part of that competition, it wasn't until Apollo 11 touched down on July 20th, 1969, that we really felt that we had won that particular aspect of competition. I don't think that there's a manned space equivalent as part of this hypersonic competition. But I think it's very clear that until we get hypersonic systems into the Army and into the Navy, and that the Air Force's systems mature and are ready to be operational and deployed, I don't think that there's going to be a sense of safety or comfort among those who are watching this competition very closely. And unfortunately, it doesn't look like we're going to get to that level of comfort for a decade.
Captain Jerry Hendricks, U.S. Navy retired. To provide and maintain a Navy, why naval primacy is America's first best strategy? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.